to Christ the Center, your weekly conversation of Reformed theology. My name is Camden Busey. We're now on episode number 656. I'm here in Grays Lake, Illinois, and I'm delighted to be back with everybody, and particularly with our good friends. We have first, I'll introduce Dr. Lane Tipton, who serves as a fellow of biblical and systematic theology here, as well as, and more significantly, a pastor of Trinity OPC in Easton, Pennsylvania. Welcome back, Lane. It's good to see you.
Oh, as always, it's great to be here, Camden.
And we also have with us Jeff Waddington, who's pastor of Faith OPC in Fawn Grove, Pennsylvania. Welcome back, Jeff. It's good to see you, too.
Oh, it's good to be here, brother.
Yeah. Well, wonderful. We've got a big episode lined up. You know, sometimes as a podcast host, you kind of you think like you're going to be able to surprise people. But by the time they're listening or watching to this, they've already seen the title and description of what we're talking about. So there's really no way to surprise people unless they're just listening blindly on an automatic playlist of some sort. But today we're going to be talking about the theology and apologetics of Cornelius Van Til, one of our favorite theologians, someone we are greatly in debt to here at Reformed Forum, and very thankful for his work in Reformed apologetics specifically. But his particular approach to apologetics is merely an application of confessional Reformed theology to that particular discipline, and therefore his approach to theology could be used in a variety of different departments, and it has been. But we've got big news, and this whole episode is going to focus on walking through material that Lane recently addressed in a new course that we have online at Reformed Academy. Now, I've been mentioning it in episodes past, but if you head on over to reformedforum.org, you'll notice that there is a new tab at the top of the page where you can click Academy, and there you can browse courses. You can follow along, and you can check in on your progress for how you're doing in those courses and pick up where you left off. And with this course, An Introduction to the Theology and Apologetics of Cornelius Van Til, we now have four courses available. We have my course, Introduction to Covenant Theology, Jim's course, Introduction to the Westminster Shorter Catechism, Questions 1 through 38, and then Lane's course, Foundations of Covenant Theology, which is the seminar that he taught in Wimberley, Texas last year. So we're trying to build out the curriculum, and really excited about the way it's coming along. And with this intro course, we have eight major sections totaling over 5 hours of instruction. I think when I broke it all down by individual video segments, we have, I believe, 43 videos ranging from, you know, 5 minutes to 12 minutes on average in that ballpark. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful series. We're going to talk about that today, walk through the different sections and aspects of the theology. But before we do that, I also want to mention that this is just the beginning of courses on Van Til, and of course on everything that we want to produce and distribute through Reformed Academy. Our faculty has about a list of 40 classes that we've sketched out and working on preparing and scheduling and filming here in the studio, and then putting out online for free as much as possible. And of course, this Van Til course is free, but it's only the first of a scheduled 8 courses. So what you'll find is that in the lectures, lecture 1 is kind of an overall introduction to everything, but then lectures, main sections 2 through 8, which again are about 4+ hours of material, serve as introductions to what we hope will eventually become an entire course in its own right. So we'll break that down and talk about it today, and I'm excited to do so. But first, I got to mention at least a reminder of where we met. Now, Jeff, you and I met online kind of through some odd circuitous means, through an old website called solagratia.org that I was running with a friend of mine. And then you started writing for it. And then we became friends. Kind of, you're my first internet friend. And then I remember back in after we'd been talking for a couple years on and off on the phone and through email, I came out to Westminster in Philadelphia to find an apartment because I was planning to matriculate in person in the summer of 2007. So, Jeff, do you remember that? You remember coming to pick me up in your van at the Montgomery Library after hours?
I do remember that, and then taking you over to Lane's front porch, right?
Exactly, where Lane still lives today. And you're like, we're going to go over for this meeting. Do you remember what it was a meeting of? This is an interrogation of Jeff.
And Dawson Kays, right?
Yes, the Dawson Kays Society. You were involved with that much earlier than I was, because this was my first introduction to it. What can you explain that? Because it's
it was a student formed and led a discussion group, DOS being the nickname for Mädchen, because Mädchen is the German word for a girl or maiden, right? And the DOS would simply be the definite article. And then Kays is the nickname for Dr. Van Til. I guess Kays is a nickname for Cornelius.
Yeah, it's like a common nickname. So like we have Bill for William.
The nicknames for Mädchen and Van Til. And so it was an apologetics, a Westminsterian apologetics orientation, student-formed and led discussion group. And so the students who attended, there was one gentleman who led the group, who was, I guess, basically behind it, and I forget his name now. I can see him in my mind.
Well, there have been several over the years.
Yes. So it changed.
Matt Williams was running it for a while, and Nate Shannon was running it for a little while. And
I think it was Matt who I remember. He had red hair and beard. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So it was a good discussion group. Sometimes more vigorous than at other times, and so that's what I took you to on Lane's front porch. And as you know, we've had many such front porch visits over the years with Lane.
Yeah, I was just an enterprising, young student. I had taken some distance courses, but I hadn't done anything on campus yet. I hadn't taken much in by way of any introduction to Mädchen or Van Til, but I've been reading Van Til quite a bit on my own. And so I was just ecstatic that we were going to go talk about Van Til, and delighted to be able to interact with people face to face on this subject matter, because it's not something you can find people to talk about with very often. And so that was kind of the beginning of it, where I met you in person was the same day, and then you took me right away to go meet Lane on his porch, and we have had many, many conversations on that porch since then, and really just tried to continue on that tradition of theological and philosophical interaction. Ideally in service of the church. And so that's what we're trying to continue here with this new curriculum, and specifically with this first course, this introduction to the theology and apologetics of Cornelius Van Til. Lane, why don't you explain, you do it in the class, but let us know a little bit about this class and about your introduction to Van Til. I think that'll serve us well as we start to get into the material.
Yeah, it's a labor of love for me to do it. When I was converted back in 1987, one of the first things I did was call David Brack, who was doing Young Life in Amarillo at the time. And I would attend Young Life meetings off and on when I was in high school, but I had absolutely no interest in Christ. It was a purely social thing. But I always listened to him, and he always had a lot of really good things to say. So I called him as soon as I was converted. And after he had given me Sproul and Packer and Burkhoff and a few other theologians, I kept asking for more. I told him how much I appreciated, gave me Warfield. He wound up giving me both Voss and Van Til, but in order, it was Van Til first and then Voss. And I began to read Van Til, and early on, I would say that in the movement of my conviction set, I became convinced very, very quickly of Calvinism and covenant theology. Paedobaptism flows right out of that. And then I started to understand the depth of Van Til's penetration on topics of Trinity and covenant, his transcendental or presuppositional apologetical approach. And during that time also became aware of the work of Greg Bahnsen and began studying under Bahnsen. At the time, as soon as I heard that he was offering courses and was an expositor of Van Til, this was all well before I went to Westminster, California in 1994 and studied out there under Klein and Strimple. Frame was there and others, Clowney. And so, Van Til has been someone that as early as late 87, I'd say early 88, I through Mr. Lee at Westminster Discount Book Service. I bought all of the things that he had after I read what Brack gave me, which was Christian Apologetics and Defense of the Faith. I combed all of the places I could find to get the resources from Van Til, and through Mr. Lee at Westminster Discount Book Service, I published The Intro to Systematic Theology, The Survey of Christian Epistemology, Common Grace and the Gospel. And so this has been almost coming of a full circle to come back and finally do a course that introduces his theology and apologetics and tries to capture something of the grand scope and depth of his theological and apologetical enterprise. So this course was a particular delight for me. It really was.
Oh, I wish I had this when I was starting.
Yes.
When I think back to when I got into it, I got into Van Til to begin with through a recommendation. It was a friend of mine, an associate pastor at the church I was attending, who was a student, a PhD student at TEDS. So he'd drive 3 hours. This was in Peoria, Illinois. So he'd drive 3 hours to get up to Deerfield, Illinois, to go to Trinity Evangelical Divinity School. And he wanted to, he had received some Van Til instruction at the Master Seminary, because they had an apologetics professor there who was influenced by Van Til. And so he wanted to kind of bone up on it in preparation of his PhD studies. So he said, "Hey, Camden, why don't we read this book together?" Because I would meet with him every week, just as kind of a young man, you know. He was kind of discipling me. But I could tell he kind of wanted to redeem his time, you know. So he's discipling me, but he's also getting something done to benefit him, which is fine. It's great if you can double up that way. And I was all for it. So he said, "Let's read this book." And he sent me a link to Van Til's Apologetic by Greg Bonson, which is, for, you know, sadly out of print. Now we find out.
That's
We hope some folks from PNR Publishing are listening, because we would like to sell a lot more copies of that with students that sign up for this free online course. So if they could print another round of those, I think we could do some work to traffic them.
Yes.
Anyway, so I read that book, which is a combination of selections of Van Til's work from many of his different books. So it collates them all and topically, and then Bonson would include his own commentary, introduction, and interaction with the material. So it's quite useful, and that was published in 98. I have no idea what life would have been like in 87. Incidentally, in God's providence, that's the year Van Til died, the year that you were converted to the Lord. So you came to Van Til right after, no doubt, he passed away.
Brack, may I please meet this man? Right. And he told me, he said, "Lane, you're not going to believe this, but the summer that you were converted, Van Til had just passed away." And mm-hmm. I was so sad. I really wanted to talk to him.
Someday. Someday
you will.
I wish I could meet him too. But, you know, I was seven. You know, I was concerned with not even baseball yet. So anyway, long time ago. So there weren't a lot of introductory materials when I started to get in more deeply. You know, you read Van Til directly. You know, I'd try to read all of the secondary literature that I possibly could on it, stuff that Scott Oliphant wrote, so stuff I think of Tom Notaro's Van Til and the Use of Evidence. I've relayed my story about that. I read that book in Wrigley Field during a rain delay. and the instant I finished it, they said, "Play ball." It was glorious. And then, Bonson had, you know, the great debate with Gordon Stein. I'd listened to that. I found that online. And then also, a series, like an introductory series where he gave like 4 or 5 lectures to college students. I don't even know where that was. Do you know what that is, guys? It was a DVD series. I think I got from American Vision, or their Covenant Media Foundation, one of those thereabouts, and watched his lecture series in which he was walking through several basics of Reformed apologetics in the tradition of Van Til. So, but other than that, there really isn't any comprehensive course that would deal specifically with Cornelius Van Til unless you went to Westminster Theological Seminary. Even there, sometimes the emphases are of a, you know, because it's a seminary course, it's not necessarily going to provide the same kind of introduction or even necessarily emphasize the same kinds of things that this course does. And so this course, I believe it's while it's substantial, and certainly every single Vantillian would be, and you know, just Reformed theologian, no matter if you're a PhD or you're just new to it, they certainly benefit from it. We've been sending it to a lot of folks, Bill Dennison, Danny Olinger, Alan Strange, you name it. There are many people that are just delighted to have these resources. And these people know Van Til very, very well, yet are benefiting greatly. Nevertheless, we're starting from the building blocks, but going very deep and thorough. And Lane, I think you just really nailed it with this class and providing an introduction like this. There really is nothing out there quite like it. It's unparalleled in that sense.
Now, before Lane, before you respond, that lecture series presented to students, Camden, that Greg Bonson did, sounds like it might be the basis of this new book, which is Against All Opposition.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a very basic. It's not. It doesn't go into a lot of detail. But it's a good intro. I mean, a good first book. But anyway, so that's interesting because it dates back to the mid-80s, the original talks. Anyways, there you go.
I think he was referencing Terminator 2 in the one I watched, so that would have been early 90s. But okay. I'm sure he had done many and had been invited to various. It might have even been at UC Irvine or through a campus ministry something like that.
Yeah, he did that frequently. But anyway, that's based on a series he did in the mid-80s.
Yeah, just right. A side note on the Van Til's Apologetic, which I pray comes back into print. It's an invaluable resource. When it came out, I was thrilled because when I read it, it was a survey of everything I'd learned from Bonson in the advanced apologetics courses I'd taken with him. And the only main difference was that he had put into those lectures large swatches of primary sources from Van Til's corpus. And then the coursework that he had done explicating Van Til was kind of interspersed with it. And so it was a wonderful review of really what Bonson gave you, ranging from the intro to a few advanced courses on apologetics. And I've just got to say, I found them so useful. There's so much more to say, and we do that in this course. We advance beyond what Bonson had said, but just such a wonderful foundational resource. I hope it comes back into print.
Yeah. Now
that would be delightful, as I understand, having conversation with folks at PNR, their stock has sold off, and they don't even. It's because it predates the PDF step in the printing process, so they don't even have a PDF. Of the book.
Yeah, there's some technical challenges, but we'll try to work on it, get them to do it. If they won't do it, maybe they can give it to us. volunteers to work on that. We can get it typeset and print it up again. Who knows? It needs to exist. Now, there are a lot of Van Til's writings that are somewhat difficult to come by. We've got a special kind of episode of Reformed Media Review where we review a lot of these original copies with Ryan Noah. So I hope to produce that, get that edited, and get it on the website sooner rather than later. But for prospective students who want to take the course and maybe are having difficulty finding the books, you can find them on the used market. But you can also get the works of Van Til through Logos. So years ago, I think it was Eric Sigward, who I do not know, who put together kind of a Van Til digital library on a CD-ROM. You know, for you young ones, you used to get software and resources on CDs, compact discs, which you still may see around today. But before that,
old timers had that, right?
3.5 floppies, 5.25 floppies before that. I'm expressing
the CD-ROM.
You did.
Yeah.
It probably won't even load in your computer. But point being, you can get the digital resources through Logos, the entire Van Til collection right there, which is tremendously handy. So things are a little bit more accessible if you have some money. And it's not too cost prohibitive to get that library. But if you don't have it, finding used books, but the Van Til Reader by Bonson is a real quick, easy way for $30 or so to just get a large swath of what you need. Let's talk a bit about some of the materials in the course, and particularly the necessity of this class Some people may say, well, why spend so much time on Cornelius Van Til? Are you guys, you know, exalting this man to be, you know, some sort of saint? Is this some, you know, form of hagiography? Why does Reform Forum care so much about Voss and Van Til? It's weird. It's quirky. Well, sure, it can be weird and quirky, but that doesn't bother me. I hope it doesn't bother you two brothers.
Not at all.
We love these two theologians so much because they are excellent expressions of a type of theologizing, of an approach to the scripture that we believe is most faithful to what the Bible tells us about itself. And so when we're looking at how God has revealed himself through the things that have been made, and also through his word specifically, we also realize how he revealed himself progressively through the ages and how he interacts with his people, mediated through covenants to bring his chosen people into a more glorious, exalted life with him in heavenly places. And Voss and Van Til are more contemporary-ish examples of theologians who understood that and devoted their life to expressing that very idea. So when we're following after and trying to build upon the work of Voss and Van Til, it's not out of blind devotion to these men. We hope it's not, and we don't ever want it to be, but it's out of following in their model, in their mold, in their path, and really learning from and seeking their leadership, so to speak, through their writings and through their example. And so Voss Group is a means by which we promote that legacy. And Van Til, an excellent student of Voss. Voss was his most influential teacher. Is certainly an excellent model of how a Vossian type of theology and biblical theology may be applied to the discipline of apologetics or defending the faith. But really, we see with Van Til that he's not merely a narrow-minded apologist, but a theologian seeking to express the very nature of the immutable, self-contained Trinity and how that triune God relates to all of creation and is, in fact, the foundation of and the sustainer of all of that creation. But, brothers, why? It's Van Til's under attack. He always has been, ever since he started writing. But in many ways, we see a resurgence of this attack, either from people outside the tradition entirely, especially with people that would criticize Van Til's reading of Thomas Aquinas. But we see it even from within our own denominations, you know, the circles of NAEPARC. We have folks like Richard Muller. We have John Fesco, Keith Matheson, other people that are attacking Van Til and trying to demonstrate how he is an incompetent theologian. Others who reject his approach to natural theology. Whether they understand it is another question. There's a forthcoming book from the Davenant Institute I was just made aware of that's going to be addressing, I think, with 13 different chapters, all of Van Til's failures in natural theology. So, you know, we're dealing with a context, a polemical context in which Van Til's kind of being dug up from the grave and trying to kick him, you know. But at the same time, we see that his theology and what he actually taught is still as applicable, as important, and as necessary today as it was back in the 50s and 60s. Van Til was largely writing in a polemical context against absolute idealists and against neo-orthodoxy, but the errors of those theologies are just, you know, multiplying today. They maybe are multiplying in different forms, but brothers, I mean, do you agree? I mean, I'm seeing evangelical appropriations of all the things that Van Til was trying to fight against.
Some of the negative assessment of Van Til is attributed to misunderstanding. Some of it is, I suppose, bad will. Some of it is the result of students of Van Til who have not followed in his track as they ought to. But certainly, you know, Van Til has been iconoclastic in terms of the history of apologetics. He's also applying standard, what I'd call standard Dutch Reform, Continental Reform, also Westminsterian Reform theology to the discipline of apologetics. And one of the benefits of, say, having Bovink in English now is that you read him and you go, wow, he sounds like Van Til. Well, what we realize is actually Van Til is sounding Bavinckian.
Or Voss in Voss's Dogmatics.
Or Voss, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, the same thing, right? So you realize that Van Til is synthesizing. He's weaving a tapestry from strands that have been understood and appreciated within the Reform tradition, and he's taking it and applying it to an area demonstrating that apologetics has often been done in a hodgepodge, over too eclectic a manner, not consistent with the theology it's seeking to defend.
Apologetics is often approached as some sort of arbitrary decision that you make after your theology's done. You know, you have a method of, you say, well, we've said all these things about theology, but then the Reformed person who believes that God is the creator and sustainer of all things, God is omniscient, omnipotent, but yet at the same time, we're all of a sudden going to decide that practically speaking, man just operates on his own. And we're going to, give evidences, neutral facts to unbelievers who are dead in their sins and incapable of thinking correctly about matters. And we're going to allow them to ascertain the truthfulness of Scripture based on these evidences we give them. Now, I know it's very simplistic and simplified, but those are some of the matters that are at stake. But it all starts for Van Til with the very doctrine of God, which is why I love the fact that Voss's Reformed Dogmatics are available, but also Bavinck, and there's been such a resurgence in Bavinck studies. We see the Trinitarian approach and the commitment to classical theism, you know, the classical forms of immutability and the divine attributes. We see Voss and Bavinck having a commitment to those, but Van Til as well. Now, Van Til did speak at times in an innovative way, in order to protect what I believe is a classical form of theism. But Lane, could you explain how the Trinity and the self-contained triune God is so essential to Van Til? If we get that wrong, you can't understand anything he's talking about.
Sure. Let me build on the previous conversation as well, incorporate that in. I think what a lot of Van Til's critics are concerned about is some of Van Til's disciples have gone the way of theological mutualism, ascribe change to God, claimed that when God relates to the world, he needs intermediate, neither divine nor human properties that relate him to the world. And that makes it appear that Van Til himself might be heterodox. But if you look back at what Van Til's doing, following Voss and the Reformed tradition, Van Til, one of his chief critiques of Bard is not Chalcedonian. Bard is not fundamentally full-blooded creedal. He has rejected the theology of the ecumenical creeds and intermingled God and man. And Van Til's critique of many other theologians and philosophers is that they're not fully Reformed. They're not Calvinistic. They're not following the confessional standards of the church. And so Van Til's starting point as someone committed to the theology of the Scriptures is that he is deeply creedal, robustly confessional, and he's not an evangelical biblicist trying to do his theology in the corner, aiming for innovation. He's taking the resources of the Scriptures and their creedal and confessional expressions, and he's seeking to apply them in an orthodox way in constructive contexts. He's interacting with idealism, he's interacting with Bard, he's interacting with Roman Catholicism, and he's fundamentally orthodox, yet deeply constructive as a theologian. Now, a lot of his critics, I think, for reasons due to biblicistic and evangelical misappropriations of Van Til, by those who might want to claim the name Van Tilian, I think that's put a really bad taste in the mouths of some of his critics. But if you go back to his doctrine of the Trinity, for instance, which you asked about, Camden, one of the things that Van Til makes so explicit is that if you deny that God remains self-contained, immutable and impassible in his relation to creation, if you deny that point, Van Til says you have committed perhaps the chief theological sin of correlativism. That is, making God and the creature mutually participant in a common event of becoming, a common vortex of change and transitions and intellectual and emotional growth that applies to God and man in this new relation of mutual becoming, participation in time and change and chance. Van Til, seeking to be Chalcedonian, will not allow for any kind of mutual participation either of the creature in God or God in the creature. And in that way, and this is exemplified especially in his critique of Barth, in that way, Van Til is stunningly Chalcedonian, and he's thoroughgoing in his theology of God as simple, absolute, and immutable, not simply apart from, but even more intensively in his relation to creation and in his special act of providential voluntary condescension, which we call covenant. So that the God of the covenant is an absolute, immutable, impassable, self-contained God and the final reference point of all human predication, and the one who in his revelation, therefore, speaks with absolute authority. I think if critics of Van Til would recognize the depth of that insight, the deeply Catholic and Reformed character of his Reformed biblical and systematic theology, I think they would go from being critics to being deeply appreciative of someone who not only held the line of orthodoxy, but constructively advanced it over against the inroads of deviant Roman Catholic theology, deviant neo-Orthodox theology, deviant absolute idealism, and other forms of idealism. And this course is designed in part to capture that Van Til, who has been forgotten due to a constellation of reasons, I think.
Yeah. Well, let's parse this out a little to speak about two very basic examples. You mentioned theological mutualism, but then you also mentioned, you know, evangelical approaches. We could fit in there, modernist approaches, because that's where some of the evangelical approaches are moving. And Van Til was one of the earliest English writing critics on Barth and the form of new modernism, but then the Roman Catholic side of things. So when we're talking about the God-world relationship, Van Til purportedly would come in every single lecture, and he would draw the same lesson, the same diagram on the chalkboard. It's two circles, a larger circle and then a smaller circle. Those are connected by lines. And the larger circle was supposed to represent the self-contained triune God, the absolute God, independent, immutable, impassible, everything that we want to say according to classical theism, and particularly Reformed confessional theism. He did not want to, nor did he, deviate from that. And we can talk about his Trinitarian theology when we get there, and you can also watch the lectures on that if you would like to criticize. But the point is that there's the creator, there's the creature, and we can't blend the two. The lines that represent the connection are meant to indicate the voluntary condescension on God's part, which we express by way of covenant. That's how God has told us he relates to us. But in that relation, there is never a blending or a merging of the two. And that's where so many approaches go wrong, because they introduce a third thing. Lane, can you explain what that third thing is? Let's maybe start with Barth first, and then we see how that works itself out in evangelical theology of late, where people are a little bit fascinated with some of those things, but then also the Roman Catholic version.
Yeah, when you're thinking about the creator-creature distinction, Barth affirms the absolute ontological distinction between the creator and the creature. But where Barth goes so wrong is when God relates to the creature, he relates by virtue of a third thing that he calls God's time for us. God takes time to himself in the event of Jesus Christ, so that both God and man in Jesus Christ are in a mutual process of becoming God for us and God with us. There's a mutualizing of divine and human participation in time, so that God is not in relation to the creature absolute, self-contained, simple, impassible. He is rather a participant in the becoming that we ascribe to the creature, mutually appropriated to God in this event of God's becoming Jesus Christ, the Christ event. And both Van Til and Bovink say that there is no intermediate category between the creator and the creature in which the two participate and by which they are related. Not time, if it's Barth, not being, if it's Roman Catholic theology, not historical contingency, if it's evangelical mutualism. Rather, God as the self-contained triune God relates to man as dependent and created and contingent, and he does not need any third thing in order to relate. He relates sovereignly, freely from himself, so that God as God, self-contained and absolute, relates to man as man, image bearer in covenant, without either man participating in God's being or God participating in man's becoming. And that is, if you want something rock bottom for the theology of Van Til, you have to say this: what he affirms in the creator-creature distinction, he continues to affirm at every point in the creator-creature relation. And that sets him off over against Neo-Orthodoxy on the one side, Roman Catholicism on the other side, because in Neo-Orthodoxy, God and man participate in this third time. And in Roman Catholicism, man, through grace, begins to participate in the interior essence and processions of the Godhead. And Van Til is saying a robust no to both. And in that way, he's maintaining something not only true of classical theism, but he's maintaining something fundamentally true of Reformed anthropology and covenant. And I think if as we continue to expound Van Til and understand him against the backdrop of his robust commitment to Augustine, Calvin, Voss, Bovink, the Hodges, and others, I think you start to get a very different view of Van Til than Van Til, some kind of, let's just say, some kind of evangelical, biblicistic mutualist. He's actually the very antithesis of those things. And the course is designed in part to help people get an orientation of Van Til to see some of these things.
Yeah. Idealism is another one that gets thrown in there. I guess that's the last lecture here in the course, last section. So we have eight major sections. The eighth major section is on idealism, although there are 43, I believe, video segments here. But idealism is one that's thrown out there so often because Van Til will use terms like concrete universal and other phrases that were typically used by idealists, either absolute idealists or, of the British variety, but there are also Americans. There's also Germans. We've got Hegel. We've got Kant. You name it. Van Til was thoroughly aware of various forms of idealism and sought to criticize them and really to destroy that theology as it posed a danger to the church, even in his doctoral dissertation. And he never stopped doing it throughout all of his works. Nevertheless, at least as early as the 1950s, in 1953 with the Calvin Forum, there were several articles by Jesse DeBoer, Cliff Orlebaek, and others who were claiming that Van Til was an idealist. Look at the terms he uses. He's an idealist. And now we're seeing a resurrection of this with the criticisms from Fesco and others who are presently resurrecting a criticism from 70 years ago. So how did Van Til relate to idealism? What was his intent? And not just his intent, but what do his writings demonstrate about his awareness of idealism and his fundamental critique of it?
Well, that's something we deal with in the course, both in the intro and the first lecture and then in the final lecture. And let me just put it this way. The hallmark of idealism, the absolute idealism that Van Til was interacting with, is that the absolute needs the particulars of the changing space-time world to achieve full self-consciousness, to come to full actualization. Put it this way, Barth actualizes the mutuality of God and man at the alpha point in the Christ event. That's where God and time, God and man come together in this third time, and both are mutually becoming in the Christ event. For the absolute idealist, there is an incremental movement by which the absolute comes toward full self-actualization, comes toward full self-consciousness of both self and the world through a process of interaction with space-time particularity, moving toward what Hegel called a concrete universal, where there's nothing in the universal not expressed in the particulars, there's nothing in the particulars not contained in the universal. And the point of absolute idealism is that the absolute becomes absolute only at the omega point of an historical process. Van Til paced Barth and paced the idealist, but now we're talking about idealism. Van Til says, no. If you're looking for a concrete universal, a fully self-conscious, self-contained, self-complete entity, do not think of an historical process moving toward an omega point and yielding a concrete universal. Rather, think of God himself as self-contained, self-complete, immutable, impassable, and simple in all of his relation to creation, from its alpha to its omega. That God remains self-contained at every point along the line. There is no becoming. There is no development. There is no unactualized potential in God. And so Van Til's critique of absolute idealism, we could talk about Kant if we decide to, is that it reduces to pragmatism, to the idea that space and time and change and chance are fundamental to the identity of the developing absolute. And so Van Til's brilliant critique of idealism, and by the way, if you don't understand his doctoral dissertation and his critique of idealism, you're going to miss the rest of his theology and his critique of post-Enlightenment theology and philosophy in particular. His critique is that absolute idealism is no better than pragmatism. Why? Because it cannot affirm at any point the self-contained, self-complete, triune personal God. And so in this lecture series, we try to feature that and say that when Van Til uses the language of the concrete universal, it's analogous to John using the Logos theology, using the Logos language in John 1 and saying the Logos is not an immanent principle of rationality, but the self-contained person of the Trinity, that second person of the Trinity, eternally begotten of the Father, and as such, immutable, impassible, and self-contained. So Van Til's language of concrete universal, far from being a concession to idealism, is the strongest conceivable critique of idealism, because he's saying that what the idealists are after, a concrete universal, cannot be found through a historical process yields a concrete universal. You have to begin with the one in whom unity and diversity are equally ultimate and equally immutable from all eternity.
Yeah, and there's a great difference with the Kantian form as well, because the idealist would say in the Kantian variety that there are merely phenomena out there, but it's the mind of the critical subject that imposes categories upon the phenomena in order to make sense of them. So, in effect, reality exists in the mind of each critical subject. And Van Til is saying the exact opposite of that, because he would say that reality exists in the mind and according to the knowledge of God and according to his sovereign power alone, and that all subjects, all human beings, think God's thoughts after him, yet on a created level, analogously. We don't have a strict identity with God, but that doesn't make our knowledge false either. These are some just very basic categories, very basic theological constructs that Van Til uses, which are mere applications of just very basic dicta of classical theism.
Yes.
God is omniscient. We are not. God creates and sustains. We don't. We don't become God. God remains transcendent, yet he truly relates to us. Van Til's just working these basic points out in polemics and in defending the truth in the face of a variety of errors, forms of idealism being one. And, you know, there are many others that he addresses, neo-orthodoxy, etc. One final thing, I just on concrete universal, sometimes people have difficulty thinking about terms like that. Think of the alternative term, an abstract universal. You know, there are many who would say that God doesn't exist. He's just a mere idea, something that we make up, you know, a God of the gaps of sorts, or some power that's out there that, you know, we can't make sense of the world, so we have to have some sort of universal explanation that kind of totalizes everything, a unified theory of everything, you know, in the form of a deity. And Van Til saying, no, a God is the universal, but he's also concrete. As there are those who would say that things that are real can only be particular. And he's saying, no, we have a concrete universal. So even there, he's doing, in some ways, a play on words, appropriating a term from idealism, but using that term to demonstrate, number one, the failures of idealism on its own terms, but number two, the wonderful truth of God's scriptures as they've been given to us. Amen. That's what Van Til's all about.
Yeah. And yep. In fact, in Common Grace and the Gospel, to make your that same point, Camden, I think this is right on point. Van Til says that for a Christian philosophy of history, the moment in terms of its the interface of laws and facts and the lockstep transitions that move in time, that the significance of the moment is exhausted by the being, plan, and knowledge of the immutable triune God. And so it is this God who gives the moment its significance and is in no way conditioned by the moment, but is the all-conditioning one who renders the moment what it is and right. gives it its significance. And that is the polar far side of what the idealists were saying about the nature of history in relation to the absolute. So it's an absolute an absolute contrast that Van Til's drawing with the absolute idealist tradition, and the same with Kant. He's saying that God, not the human mind, is the source for all intelligibility, etc. And it really is just Van Til's dependence on the scriptures as understood in the creeds and confessions of the church, and really epitomized in the biblical and systematic theology of his favorite professor, Voss. Take his Reformed dogmatics, take his biblical theology, take the Pauline eschatology, take the self-disclosure, take the kingdom of God in the church, take all that Voss taught Van Til as being a kind of expression of the deeper Protestant conception contained in the creeds and confessions of the church. It's that deeper Protestant conception that Van Til is so brilliantly and comprehensively applying to the issues of his day. And that really has to be given all of the emphasis that we can give it, I think.
I would just say your last section on idealism, I think, should put to bed any accusations that Van Til is an idealist. And I would say that with the whole course in view, that there is a clarity and a depth and a breadth that is I've not seen in other presentations. And we know that this is a prospectus for a whole series of courses, right? You get this one, and then out of this we'll develop several other, ideally, pardon the pun, several other courses that will go into more detail than you do even here. But I just want to say the clarity, depth, and breadth of the presentation is one that I wish I had when first introduced to Dr. Van Til's work. It would have contributed greatly to the practical absorption of his material and use of his apologetic in my life.
Yeah, I wish I had it myself. We got to say the course is available online right now. It is for free. This is Friday, Well, in the podcast published time, this should be Friday, July 24th, 2020. So if you head on over to reformedforum.org/academy, you should see a list of courses, and this would be one of them, an introduction to the theology and apologetics of Cornelius Van Til. You can register for free if you don't already have an account. They're free accounts, and then you can register for the course and start taking it. So again, they're 43, I believe. I'm pretty sure that's the correct number, but at least 5 hours and about 15 minutes of instruction on video. We did it in studio. We have three camera angles. We did our best. We keep getting better and better, but I think this turned out really nicely, better than our previous work, which also turned out well. But we have this broken down into 8 segments, and then each of the 8 segments has a corresponding quiz. So as you watch the videos and do the reading with the reading schedule that we've supplied, then you can follow along and take the questions that help to reinforce the main points of the lectures, the videos. And you can do self-assessment, because the system, the platform will tell you, you know, the questions you got wrong. And then you can know if you should go back and review some material before moving on to the other material. And you can progress through the course. And then hopefully we'll have the next one out by the time you finish. And if not, then head on over and take some of our other courses in the meantime until we get the next one produced and distributed. And finally, I do also want to mention, and just whet the appetite, that we are in the works of creating other forms, other learning opportunities. So we don't have it all worked out in terms of the schedule and the logistics of it as of yet. But I do want people to know that we are developing online study groups, or what we call cohorts, where you will be able to apply and to become a member, a part of a cohort for online study. And as it looks right now, it'll probably be once a week for about an hour, probably for 8 weeks. And you'll be able to be in a group with perhaps in the ballpark of about 10 students, as well as Dr. Tipton leading the discussion. And you'll come prepared by watching the lectures, by doing the quizzes and doing the readings, but then come for a weekly discussion group where you can work out the ideas in groups. We can in many ways try to reproduce the Dawson Case Society and the experience of learning on the front porch, which I always found to be the place where I integrated and applied, where I really came to own, the material I was learning in the classroom. So this would be beneficial, not just for people new to Van Til, although we encourage people new to Van Til with the basic understanding of Reformed theology, that you can learn and participate and grow from this, but also seminary students who would like to augment their education and supplement it in ways with this this rich and deep theology of Van Til, and even those who are ministers, pastors, and other academics who are already out there that have been reading and interacting with Reformed apologetics for many, many years. You will grow and be richly blessed. I myself was tremendously benefited by watching these lectures and working through the material. I know Jeff has as well, and many other theologians. So this is something in which everyone can benefit. So we encourage you to head on over and sign up, no matter where you are. And we're working on raising some funds to try to get translations as well. As we speak, we have 37 countries represented at Reformed Academy, and we are expecting that to grow. And we welcome people from all over the world to come and to participate and take our free courses. And we're trying our best to raise the necessary funds so that we can get those videos closed captioned in English, as well as translated in a variety of languages. So if you're interested in that, please visit us online. You can contact me through the contact form, or you can also donate at reformedforum.org/donate. It's a big mouthful, but thanks, brothers, for joining me today and sharing this information with everybody. And we want to thank you for watching and listening, and we hope everyone joins us again next time on Christ the Center.